everybody remember that time when a cartoon shut down a major American city? You know? Well, today on Fails and Fixins, we're going to take a look back, stepping back about a decade to a time when a show on Cartoon Network had the power to shut down a major U.S. city. If you are listening to this podcast and you go, hey, I got some ideas, Dave didn't cover this or Dave didn't cover that, then how about you hop over onto our Facebook page and let us know about it. You can visit us at facebook.com/failsandfixins.
Today, we are going to take a look at something that happened in the mid-2000s, how Adult Swim caused an entire city to shut down. Those of you that don't know what Adult Swim is, it started out as a programming block on Cartoon Network. In the late 90s, they experimented with a show called Space Ghost Coast to Coast that was aimed not at the traditional cartoon watching audience, so not little kids, but more at teenagers, 20-year-olds, 30-year-olds. And by the end of 2000, Space Ghost had been incredibly popular and had sustained itself for 5-6 years at that point. So William Street, which was Space Ghost's production company, decided to experiment with some other shows. And at the end of 2000, between the hours of 4 and 5 a.m., they did just that. They added a show called C-Lab 2021. They added Aqua Teen Hunger Force. They did a spinoff of Space Ghost called The Barack Show, and they did a show that I love called Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law. I can't sing. I apologize for doing that. The block was a hit, and they spun it off onto something called Adult Swim, which they then separated from Cartoon Network in the Nielsen ratings. They treated it as a completely different channel. When Adult Swim would start, there were parental warnings, and they created their own very distinct bumpers in between Cartoon Network and Adult Swim. They had these old people hopping in the pool and like a lifeguard speaking on a microphone. It's a pretty cool little thing and became very successful. And Aqua Teen Hunger Force, in fact, was so successful that it ended up getting its own spinoff movie. Now, if you don't know what Aqua Teen Hunger Force is, it's a show based around sentient fast food items and their neighbor, Carl. That's right. They have a house and they have a neighbor and his name's Carl. The show ran for 139 episodes. Not only that, but it just recently ended. Just recently ended. And by just recently, I mean 4 years ago. So it ended in 2015. But in 2007, the show had been so successful that Adult Swim decided to give it its own movie. And it was the first ever Adult Swim movie. So this is a big deal for the station and for the show. Now, production began in 2005, and it had a $750,000 budget, which in movie terms is not much money. In real terms, wow, that's a lot of money. It was to be released in April of 2007, and it was going to have an R rating, which the creators of the show kind of believe that that did not work in their interest. While the material lends itself to an R rating, they understand that while Adult Swim's stated demographic is that 18 to 34-year-old demographic, really what they were looking at was more like 15 to 28, something that was a little bit younger, you know, when people start watching SNL. That's the demographic they're really looking for. To reach out to people to get them to know about this movie, they had to do a little bit of promotion. They pandered to their base quite a bit, showing commercials during Adult Swim and not really moving outside of Turner that much. But they did decide to do a guerrilla marketing campaign. So they hired this group out of Boston called Interference Inc. that was headed by Sam Ewan. And what Sam did, or what Interference Inc. did, was they created these flat, light bright style magnetic devices that you could post up and they would light up at night and they would show the Moonanites flipping the bird. The Moonanites are very popular characters on Aqua Teen Hunger Force and they're a part of the movie. They speak in a very distinct way. They're made like old Atari graphics. They actually look like the Space Invaders. So doing a light bright to them is actually very reminiscent of what they look like on the show. Now, these things, they were battery powered. The batteries were held in with electrical tape. And because it was flat, there are some exposed wires. So what Interference did was they hired these local artists to place them around 10 different cities. They placed them in New York, LA, Chicago, Boston, Atlanta, Seattle, Austin, San Francisco, Philadelphia. And I want to reiterate, they placed them in Boston. So they put them up all over the place. just in random areas. And these things were out for weeks. The idea was people would see them, and those people that knew what a Moonanite looked like would take photos and share those photos with their friends. So something to generate just a little bit of buzz amongst those that already know about the movie, and maybe have someone look at them and go, huh, what's that Atari thing doing flipping the bird? What is this all about? And they would look for it, and they would see what it was about. Everything worked according to plan for a little while. We wouldn't be talking about this right now if everything worked completely according to plan, right? This is Fails and Fixins. There has to be a fail. And on Wednesday, January 31st, 2007, at 8.05 a.m., someone noticed the Moonanites on a support for Boston's I-93. That person in this post-9/11 world, that's a phrase we're going to say a couple times, saw something and they said something. So they notified the police. The police looked at it, and at 9 a.m., they notified the bomb squad. Now, the bomb squad decided that this thing had characteristics of an IED, an improvised explosive device, which include exposed wires, batteries, and electrical tape. At 10 a.m., they had determined that this device was likely not an actual explosive. However, to be safe, they went ahead and blew it up. And there's great news footage I shared on the Fails and Fixins website earlier of them blowing this thing up. This caused I-93 to be shut down for nearly 2 hours, and it caused the city of Boston to somewhat come to a standstill during that time before they decided that this was, as they called it, a hoax device. And they didn't call it an art project. They didn't call it a marketing stunt. They called it a hoax device. As we all know, words carry meaning. Calling it a hoax device gives a much more nefarious spin on what it actually was. Now, during this time, during this two-hour period, media obviously is notified because they need to get the word out to let the people of Boston know there might be something wrong. So not only was it local media, but it was national media that got involved. Everybody in the nation kind of knew what was happening. And as I said, the city's calling this a hoax device. They go on to find a couple more. And before the day's over, we know there are 37 other Moonanite boards displayed throughout the city. Some of them the city found, most of them it did not. And city officials were livid. My opinion that they felt they had been embarrassed by their initial overreaction, so they went on the offensive. Their mayor, a man named Tom Menino, said of Turner Broadcasting, "I think this is just outrageous what they've done. It's all about corporate greed." Then Attorney General Martha Coakley was quoted as saying, "It had a very sinister appearance," referring to the Moonanite display. "It had a battery behind it and wires." Yeah, it had a battery and wires because it lit up. Going back to the mayor, he put out an official statement saying, "It's outrageous in a post-9/11 world that a company would use this type of marketing scheme. I am prepared to take any and all legal action against Turner Broadcasting and its affiliates." Once again, that was part of the official statement. These people were livid, and they're not all. If you go through, you can find other city officials also just really, really upset about everything that had gone down. So upset, in fact, that they arrested the two artists, the two local artists that Interference had hired to scatter these Moonanite promotional materials. One of them was a guy that goes by the name Zebler. He's got a website right now, Zebler.com. His name was Peter Bierdolfsky. The other guy was Sean Stevens, who went by VJ something. Those two guys get arrested. Turner and Interference work to bail them out. And when they get out, there's a media scrum outside the courthouse. Of course there is. This has been a huge story all day, right? So as they go up to the media scrum, they make a quick statement where they talk about 70s hairstyles. And then they say they're only taking questions about 70s hair and dreadlocks. This was somewhat on the legal advice of their counsel, as they were told not to take questions about the matter at hand. So they weren't supposed to be talking about the devices. So they decided they're artists. They're kind of funny guys. They decided to talk about 70s hairstyles. This ticked off the city even more. They felt like the weight of the situation was not being felt by these guys. And they decided they were really going to prosecute them. Interference Inc. founder Sam Evans was traveling as all this was going down in the morning when it first hit. So he's on a train. And when he found out and he had a chance to contact his employees, which 2007 things are a little bit different, but we're moving into today's. So he contacts his employees and he just tells them all to be quiet, don't answer questions, keep their heads down. And he went so far as to pull down the Interference website. Now, back then in 2007, that kind of worked. Because if you look at these news articles and things, they just mentioned that, one, it takes them forever to figure out who the company was behind it. And once they did, they didn't really have any information on him or the people that worked for him. So in 2007, that sort of worked to keep them out of the spotlight. Okay, so let's fast forward a little bit later in the day. By 4:50 p.m., Turner Broadcasting publicly apologizes to the city of Boston. And they put out a statement saying they regret what's happening, blah, blah, blah. They're trying to keep interference and the artists and the movie out of trouble. So they make an apology. And by February 5th, so, you know, not that much later, Turner and Interference had agreed to pay the city of Boston $2 million in reimbursement for the city resources that had gone to tracking down, finding these Moonanite things and getting rid of them. Turner issued another statement here after this February 1st settlement saying that the campaign had been irresponsible in a quote unquote post 9/11 world. By February 10th, so 5 days after the settlement, Jim Samples, the head of Cartoon Network, announced his resignation. And I'm going to go ahead and quote his letter here. He said he was compelled to step down, effective immediately, in recognition of the gravity of the situation that occurred on my watch. For those of you that have listened to this podcast, you know I'm always quick to say the CEO has to step down when something goes terribly wrong. It's good that the head of Cartoon Network did that. It was the right move. It was a smart move. However, there were other moves that could have been made to maybe keep this from happening. I should also add the city of Boston was being ridiculed nationally over this event as it's going down. As soon as pictures of the devices, the possible explosive devices popped up, a lot of people knew what it was. Aqua Teen Hunger Force was a very popular show. One of the commenters that ended up being interviewed, I forget if it was in one of the newspapers or if it was on one of the news stations, but he said, hey guys, it's LED, not IED. So Boston was catching a lot of flack for the way they handled this. And it was also kind of proof that those in charge of the city of Boston had a pretty wide gap between those who lived in the city of Boston. A lot of the people in the city knew what those were. A lot of people across the country knew what the Moonanites were. However, city officials did not. And it exposed something of a generation gap there. So how do you improve upon this campaign? What do you do to maybe keep the city of Boston from shutting down and keep Turner Broadcasting from paying $2 million? Well, one of the things you can do is if you're Interference Inc., if you're Sam Evans, maybe you give local authorities a heads up after you've posted these things. I saw Sam talk about this a little bit, and he said that he didn't want to tell them ahead of time because, to paraphrase, it's easier to ask forgiveness than permission. Apparently, it's very difficult to work with city officials when you're doing a campaign like this. There are different types of ordinances with guerrilla marketing tactics than there are with other tactics. So they wanted to kind of tread lightly. And for weeks, it worked like that. And in plenty of other cities, it worked like that. In Austin, Seattle. My thought is maybe you go ahead and tell the authorities. You go ahead. If you are dead set on planning this without letting them know ahead of time, then you absolutely need to let the authorities know. You might notice some of these things. These are part of a marketing stunt. We apologize. Whatever you need to say at that point, you go ahead and say it. Another thing you can do, maybe if you're dead set on not telling authorities, not doing any of this, maybe you choose better targets for where you put these things up. The destinations in which they put these were fairly random, and they were all over the city. They had 38 of them. They just threw them up all over the place. Maybe if they had chosen target destinations where their audiences were likely to be instead of kind of random places, they would have avoided this type of situation altogether. If they had put them in clubs where, you know, you have your 18 to 34 audience, or, you know, arcades. Are arcades still a thing? Were they still a thing in 2007? I don't know. But you put them places, comic book stores, some places where people are going to see them and know what they are, and they're going to be like, oh, cool. And they take their little picture and Moonanite invasion. Yay! On the other end of things, the city of Boston looked really bad coming out of this. So what do you do with the city of Boston? You have an initial overreaction, okay? It's understandable that maybe the head of the police department doesn't have time to watch Cartoon Network late nights. He wouldn't know what a Moonanite is. Totally understandable. Totally understandable the bomb squad shows up. Totally understandable you contact the media. Maybe as soon as you find out that this isn't an actual explosive device and you've shown a photo of it, as soon as word starts trickling in as to what it is, maybe you don't go on the offensive against Turner. Maybe you just say, this was a marketing stunt. We're not happy about it. We didn't know about this. We were worried people's lives were in danger. As a result, we have contacted Turner and we are finding ways to make this better. You put out a statement that sounds less aggressive. The city of Boston's aggressiveness towards Turner and towards Cartoon Network specifically is what came off as so bad for the city. It was somewhat understandable, laughable, but understandable that they saw the Moonanites and they thought they were bombs. I get it, man. Once again, post 9/11 world, I get it. People were on alert. You see something, you say something. It was drilled in our heads. So it makes sense. But at the end of the day, what was hurt for Cartoon Network? Nothing was hurt. They got so much promotion out of this. This was a news story for weeks. In fact, the budget of the movie was $750,000. The city of Boston got a $2 million settlement out of this. The movie went on to make a modest amount, but it was still almost $5.5 million. So they came out almost $3 million on top after all this is said and done. And that is before you get into DVD sales, which at the time, Netflix wasn't really streaming yet. So they made some money, but that's not all they made. The guys that created Aqua Teen Hunger Force, they're not the types to look at something like this and say, oh, that's cool, whatever, Boston. They were the types to create a couple episodes entitled Boston, where they just rip on the city. They made the decision, or Cartoon Network made the decision, it's hard telling when you look at it, not to ever air these, and they actually didn't finish the episodes. However, they did leak online around 2015, not long before the show ended its run. You can watch them. They're not the greatest, but they are kind of fun, especially knowing the story of what went down. So that's all I've got for you guys this week on Fails and Fixins. If you have a better fix for this situation than the two or three options that I gave you, email me, contact the podcast, contact the broadcast, get on our Facebook page. The Facebook page is Fails and Fixins, F-I-X-I-N-S. You can contact me at dave@failsandfixins.com. And that's all we got this week. So I will see you guys next week when I come at you with another fail and another fix.